Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Something he assured me was one of the first things that we were going to do, and here it is. He's been in office really just a few weeks, and we're over here talking about it.
Chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Dr. John Bozeman.
The worst thing is when you're uncertain. And right now, with the law the way it is, you can play with bad rules, you can play with good rules. If you don't know what the rules are, you simply can't play. It freezes people. And that's what we've had in the past. So thank you, Administrator Zeldin, for doing this, and thank you for your staff. And we look forward to working with you, not only on this, but so many other issues, just to make the regulatory. We need regulation. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, but it needs to be based on common sense and science.
This is Agriculture Today.
It's an exciting day for us here at EPA.
Lee Zeldin, the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, as EPA is revising the definition of waters of the U.S. with a new rulemaking process.
I will tell you that through my personal experience going through a confirmation process on the Hill, meeting with senators, many of them here today, they were passionately advocating on behalf of their farmers, their ranchers, and other landowners, talking about issues concerning waters of the U.S. And as I was preparing for my confirmation hearing and reading Supreme Court cases like Sackett, learning about all of the ping-ponging rulemaking between administrations, looking at a map of the United States highlighted in different colors instead of one, as different regulatory regimes and definitions are being used. It was a pledge that these senators asked me to make to them and to their constituents that if confirmed, as soon as I get into office, I would do everything in my power to make sure that we are fixing WOTUS once and for all, that we are pursuing a definition that is simple, that is durable, and it will withstand the test of time. Our goal in going through this process is not to be an activist in going through a procedure. This is to simply follow the rule of law, to follow the Constitution, to listen to the stakeholders, and to make the right decision for the American people. We are not looking for this to be a ping pong anymore. What we're looking for is to simply follow the guidance from Sackett. It gave us a clear path in determining what waters are waters of the United States. It found that only those wetlands with a, quote, continuous surface connection to a relatively permanent water are waters of the United States. The court also struck down the long-utilized significant nexus test, leaving only those wetlands that abut or are adjacent to waters of the United States as jurisdictional. As I mentioned, this country currently operates under two different regulatory regimes, one under the 2023 Biden rule and the other implementing the pre-2015 regulatory regime. We're joined by agency partners, including from the Army Corps of Engineers, and this is a whole-of-government effort. This is a partnership between agencies to be able to tackle this need important to our friends from the Hill and important to so many other Americans all across this great country. Last night, late at night, I was communicating with our Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, and I remember when just a couple weeks ago when the National Governors Association was in the White House, and we're standing on a line, and Secretary Hegseth was right behind me, and we start talking about waters of the U.S. And Russ Vogt, the new director of OMB, was right there as well. And Governor Braun, the new governor from Indiana, was just behind Russ Vogt. So as soon as I started talking about waters of the U.S. with Secretary Hegseth, I hear Russ come in, enthused, engaged, and then Governor Braun jumping in, echoing, amplifying how important this is to Indiana, and it sent a strong message. We're going to want to work together with these other agencies to make this timeline smooth, this process efficient, and to get an achievable result that you all can be very proud of quickly.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Really what we're seeing is a lot more variation in the market as prices when we think about kind of potential export bans and higher tariffs are essentially cost of doing business.
Elliot Dennis is a livestock economist with the University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
And then the second thing that I've really been seeing is really just this continue to push weights higher. And as long as we don't see huge discounts on the premiums and discount measures that USDA tracks, I think we're going to continue to see higher weights projected into the fall. And really this has an implication for kind of how much pull we're going to get through from the feedlot going into the summer months.
He mentions trade.
I think the big conversation that we've been having is just kind of what is the implications for kind of where we're delivering that product, but it's also to give us an idea of kind of where we're delivering those. I mean, so we still have a large presence in Japan, in South Korea, Mexico, Canada, of course, but those are kind of our big markets from actually the finished product. When we look at kind of where we're at, I mean, we're almost doing 50 million pounds a month, really, a month to Japan. And really, we kind of trade off between Japan and South Korea, but South Korea has recently taken over a pretty large measure. We're almost doing 60 million pounds to South Korea. So when we think about kind of where we're at long term, you know, when we think about kind of this trade wars that are going on between China and the U.S., I mean, our large markets are unaffected there. I mean, but China's still at, you know, 40 million pounds. They're our third largest trading partner and really have been since around 2020 when we started trading with them. And it's really been around this, you know, 40,000 or 40 million pounds since about 2022, the last part of that year.
So specifically for these countries, what are we looking at?
Normally it's around 40 million pounds a month. Prior to 2020, when we signed the phase one, phase two agreement, we were trading virtually nothing with them. Somewhere in the range of about 2 million pounds a year, but a lot of that was coming through kind of what we call the gray markets into China and Hong Kong. But so at least on, you know, from that standpoint, when we look at all kind of these different kind of markets disruptions, I mean, there is some amount there going to Canada and to Mexico. Mexico is about, you know, any 30 million pounds a month. And Canada somewhere in the 20 million. So, I mean, it's not inconsequential for the beef market, but one of the reasons why we've been seeing kind of that variability. One of the things that's been helping us has been kind of the resumption of live cattle or imports through the Mexican border. That's really jumped up quite a bit. And I think that's just a huge benefit and kudos to USDA APHIS and NCBA for trying to, you know, get that back up and running again. We've seen really since, you know, the last part of January, first part of February, that start to climb and we're at about, you know, 10,000 head a week that we're importing now. That's still a far cry from where we have historically been at this time, which has been about 25,000 head. So I think some of that's been weighing on the market this week. And we're going to start to see kind of that distribution between the cattle that we're importing from Canada start to change, as we start to ramp up our imports, our live cattle imports from Mexico.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done.
North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer on Wednesday at the Environmental Protection Agency offices with the new administrator, Lee Zeldin, on WOTUS.
I would say one of the things I tell my stakeholders, Mr. Administrator, more than anything is when there's a moment, when there's a, whether it's a 30-day, 60-day, plus up to 90, whatever the comment period is, I just say to my farmers, my ranchers, my landowners, my energy sector stakeholders, comment, and comment some more because the comments matter. The volume of comments matter. The intellectual clarity of the comments matter. The knowledge that you bring to this decision matters a great deal. North Dakota has been ground zero. We're a prairie pothole region where our farmers and our landowners over decades and over a century have always managed the water with the same respect as they manage the land. And because it's in their best interest, not because it's in any other group's best interest, but because it's in their best interest. And the Sackett decision, and I'm so grateful that you acknowledge the prescriptive nature of the Sackett decision. Because part of the ping pong, of course, wasn't just a lack of clarity in policy or, you know, coming from Congress or the Clean Water Act or how various administrations see it, but there was a lack of clarity even from the courts until Samuel Alito came along. And in my view, clarified lots of things. And there are a lot of people, including the previous administration, who just ignored that clarity and sort of chose to make it sound murky, to not have a reconciled national policy, to in the absence, even in the admission, that there was some prescription in the court's definition of jurisdiction, that it was still in the landowner's interest to seek their permission, to ask for a jurisdictional determination, they being the bureaucracy, before they, what was obvious, obviously not a contiguous surface water shed. And it just grates on me. And I, one of my most frustrating hearings, I think, on EPW was with the Corps over the issue of WOTUS and the permits. And General Spellman at the time, who was a great guy, was a great public servant, and I have great respect for his service, but he rather casually referred to the 80,000 annual federal water actions by the Corps of Engineers. And he moved on. And I said, I said, can we go back to that? I think you misspoke. How many federal water actions does the Corps do a year? Well, 80,000. I'm like, that's an awful lot. So why would that be? And so when Sackett happened and the ruling came out and it was so clear, at least clear enough to eliminate some waters, and it frustrated me that at that time Undersecretary Connors, who I have great respect for as well, but chose to go this seek our permission and then the rules will apply route. And I said, that's like putting a highway patrolman on every car so that the driver could seek their permission to go 65. Our laws, our rules, our regulations are based largely on people's compliance. It's an honor system. And so this is a great relief. I think you'll be overwhelmed with really good comments from Midwestern farmers and landowners, much like, you know, the run on t-shirts at the White House. And I just thank you for doing this. We look forward to participating and finding some, like I said, common ground based on common sense.
New definition coming from EPA. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We really appreciate the administration taking on to bringing clarity to WOTUS.
Zippy Duvall is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation.
I can't tell you, as I traveled this country, the discussions that we've had for decades now about WOTUS and farm labor. Cannot say that. Those are the two things I hear most of all everywhere I go. What are we going to do to fix these problems? This is a first big step in a very difficult farm economy that gives our farmers and ranchers hope. Hope that good things are going to happen in the future. You know, as you know, this is one of the worst farm economies we've had in decades, and there's so many things that need to happen to help our rural communities by helping our farmers and ranchers. And I told the leader, Senate leader, last week, we need to deliver some positive to farmers to give them that hope. And this is a absolutely wonderful positive thing that can happen. You brought up E15. We could deliver that, too, and that'd be a positive thing. A year-round E15 would be positive, too. But this is a great first step. WOTUS has been a pain in the side for our farmers and ranchers. Our farmers and ranchers want to do what's right. They just want to know what right is. And through this last administration, with their vague wording of the with the implement guidance or lack of implement guidance, or, you know, vague wording like relatively permanent. Can anybody define that? Yeah, it's relevant. It's exactly right. And our farmers shake their heads and wonder what that might be. And they have to choose between what they think is right and what's wrong, and have to hire consultants, attorneys, to push back on the federal government that's supposed to be there to help us, not hinder us doing our job. So we look forward to that clarity in an implement guidance document that our farmers can do. I remember one of your predecessors during the first administration, he and I had lunch together, and he said, "What does a WOTUS look like to you?" And I says, "Well, I'm a farmer, and I need a rule that's on one page, that's sitting on the dash of my truck right beside my devotional book. And if I have a question about a ravine on my farm, I can pick that one page up, read it, and interpret it myself, what that might look like." That's what the goal should be. It should be that simple. Because our farmers and ranchers, for generations, have worked hard to leave their farms and ranches in better shape than what they found it from their fathers and their grandfathers. None of us would do anything to hurt the environment, the water, the air that we live on, because it is our homes. It's where our families live. We consume the products off of it. You said one of your goals here is to protect human health and the environment. That defines a farmer. What we produce, we want to produce in a healthy way that helps make America healthy again. And we want to do it according to science and common sense. And you have taken the first step here in this implement guidance document to help farmers protect the environment on their land and to continue to feed this country and provide that national security, Senator, that you spoke of. So thank you so much for giving our farmers hope in this first step. We look forward to the new rule. We'll be making those comments. And, of course, along with having clarity, we need that durability, because farmers make decisions today that's going to affect them 10, 15 years down the road. And with a durable waters of the U.S. is clear, we can continue to protect the environment and our farms and make them sustainable for the future.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Coal count number is down. Last year, around this time of year, we were killing about 60,000 head a week. Now we're down to about a little under 50,000. So a little bit down this year, but there is some week-to-week variation and kind of seasonality throughout the year.
From coal cattle to fed cattle, Elliot Dennis, livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
Yeah, fed cattle, the kind of there's two main things that I've been seeing really this week. The first has kind of been the whiplash in the market from just kind of the trade discussions have been going on. I follow the kind of the October markets are kind of the big mark that I've been looking at, and we saw at least this week kind of pretty high or low, and then we were able to rebound and kind of ending out the kind of week on a high note across really all the contracts up to about 195 on the October contract.
How does this tie into consumers?
Consumer confidence is just a good barometer for us to figure out like what consumers are willing to pay into the market. And so we follow consumer confidence because it gives us an idea of, you know, are people going to purchase beef, for example? And when consumer confidence is going up, they tend to purchase more beef. When it tends to decline or erode, then we see people kind of be a bit more conservative and not purchase things like beef products. It was down about 7 points this past month. But really, when we look at it from a long-term perspective, is really we've had this kind of up and down, really plus or minus 10%, really from the second half of 2022. And so really it will go up, you know, a couple months and then come down for a couple months, go up. And it's really been kind of going sideways. That has historically not been the case. When we look kind of pre-COVID, we had pretty strong consumer confidence just kind of keep going back up since 2007, 2008. And so the fact that it's just kind of been middling shows that, you know, consumers some months kind of feel like they're doing well, and some weeks they feel like they're not, or some months they're not doing well. So that has implications for kind of spending and particularly about debt management that they do in their own household.
Digging in deeper, what about credit card debt?
The big thing that we're seeing with credit cards, which is a bit alarming, has been kind of the delinquency rate. When we look at kind of 90-day delinquency, and really what we've seen is credit card debt growing over time. But when we look at kind of total delinquencies, this tells us how many people of their balance is actually 90 days past due. So these are people who are not paying their credit cards for whatever reason. And when we look at where we're at in credit cards right now, delinquency rates, they're about 11.4%. The last time we had that high of rates was in 2012. And so this is, and really from 2012, it started to kind of go down, was somewhere in the, you know, 7 percentile. So the fact that over the last really 4 or 5 quarters that it's kind of continually to creep up, is somewhat alarming, because if you're not paying credit cards, then it's really hard to get out from beneath that. And just because the high interest rates on those, and we're not at our peak, delinquency rates that we had in, 2010, which is in that kind of 13% range, but we are kind of on that path, and something that I'm watching for, because as we see that kind of grow, that really shows us that even though consumers may be confident or their confidence is growing, they literally just don't have the capital or the wages to get out of debt. And we know that it eventually affects beef demand. What affects beef demand ultimately impacts prices we're able to receive for cattle along the supply chain.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Iowans have really had a lot of whiplash going through WOTUS in the last, actually, many, many number of years, as Chair Bozeman had expressed.
Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, in an event at the Environmental Protection Agency on Wednesday, preparing to roll out a new definition for Waters of the U.S., or WOTUS.
What we call this is regulatory whiplash, and we have seen this in the first Obama administration. We saw this then when Trump did the right thing by attempting to get rid of Waters of the U.S., but then we saw it again with Biden, and here we are again with Trump 2.0, and we really do have to stop this. You know, I'm the daughter of a small family farmer in Iowa. He is a small business owner. And much like every Iowan out there, we're tired of going through extraordinary changes that affects daily lives and businesses. And, you know, I'm so proud to be here. And thanks to President Trump for setting the record straight on this, as well as Administrator Zeldin. You do still owe me a lot after the sushi thing. Ever since my first year in Congress in 2015, I have been fighting against WOTUS. And the very first bill that I ran and managed on the floor of the United States Senate was my first year in the United States Senate in 2015. And that bill was to nullify the Obama-era WOTUS rule. It did pass through the Senate with bipartisan support. It passed through the United States House with bipartisan support. It was Obama's rule. So, of course, when it hit his desk in the Oval Office, he vetoed it. So I still believe I hold the record for the most number of bills that have been vetoed by President Obama. I think I had 2 that were vetoed. One was the WOTUS overturn. So, again, it was successful. It was bipartisan at that time. We saw that this was an egregious federal overreach for our small business owners, our farmers, our ranchers, and really every industry across the face of the United States. But what we saw then during the Biden administration was a doubling down on those efforts. And in my home state of Iowa, many of our Iowa farmers were fined because of misunderstandings about WOTUS, or, again, the regulatory whiplash that they were experiencing. So for far too long, we have seen this grip of federal government really impacting daily Iowans' lives, Americans' lives. They've threatened our communities, threatened our livelihoods. And so I am really grateful that President Trump is righting this wrong and bringing more common sense back into the regulatory environment, especially surrounding our waters of the United States. So again, I want to give great thanks to President Trump and his administration, and most particularly to Administrator Zeldin and his team for listening so closely, not only to our constituencies, but the members of Congress, those that really rely on the federal government to do the right thing. And in this example, I am so proud to say that the federal government, through President Trump, through Administrator Zeldin, is doing the right thing.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
When it comes to U.S. meat production forecast for this year,
for 2025, we expect production to keep growing at a slightly higher rate than what we saw in 24. In contrast to 24, however, the declines in beef and turkey production will be more than offset by higher growth rates in pork and broiler production.
USDA livestock analyst Michael McConnell at this year's Agricultural Outlook Forum. Turning to meat trade projections for 2025.
The outlook is for lower beef and broiler exports, while pork exports are expected to grow. Beef exports are expected to be constrained by lower production levels expected in the coming year, while respective competitive stories for pork and broiler exports in 24 are expected to carry over into 2025.
And regarding prices,
cattle, hog, chicken prices are all expected to increase. Cattle will be supported by tight cattle inventories and resilient demand. Hog and chicken prices will be supported by higher cattle prices. And in terms of turkey prices, we have seen that the hen price fall substantially since peaking in 2022. Fairly significant production cuts have not thus far resulted in supported prices. We expect that to turn in 2025. However, with average prices still below a dollar, forecast is still relatively low by historical standards.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.